that you've got something to say and that there are important things that you want to minister to us about. And we don't feel any one week is more important than another. But even having said that, Lord, I feel there is something extra special you want to do today. Help us to have hearts open and ears to hear what you want to say to us. In Jesus' name, amen. Today I want to talk to you a subject that I've taught in a lot of churches throughout the state. It's the subject of forgiveness. And this is not just about non-Christians receiving Christ. This is about what it means as a Christian to live a life of forgiveness and to be challenged to forgive when situations don't seem to warrant that you want to do that. Ultimately, for us as a Christian, the most important thing about forgiveness is that, number one, it's rooted in the nature of God. Now, because it's rooted in the nature of God, He commands us to walk in an attitude of forgiveness as a lifestyle. That's the first point that you need to know about that. So here's kind of a gotcha moment. How many times do we Christians say, well, I want to follow Jesus and be just like Him? Well, here's an opportunity to do that, because forgiveness is an essence of who God is. And because that's the essence of who God is, He says, on a moment-by-moment, day-in and day-out basis, that's how we should be living. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 32. Ephesians 4, 32 says this. Paul writes, instead, be kind to each other, tender-hearted, forgiving one another. Now, we could stop here, and that would be a completed thought. But there's a comma, because this is what Paul adds theologically. Just as God, through Christ, has forgiven you. That's the motivation why we do it. A companion verse is found in Colossians 3:13, which says, you must make allowance for each other's faults and forgive the person who offends you. Again, you could say that's a completed thought, but notice the next sentence. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. Jesus also said something similar about forgiveness in one of His famous statements on the cross, where He said this, Father, forgive them, for they don't even know what they're doing. Now, have you ever thought about that phrase for a minute? You say, what do you mean they don't know what they're doing? They had this mock trial. They all cried, crucify Him, crucify Him. They knew exactly what they were doing. But Jesus saw something on a larger scale. He looked at them and realized, if they really, really understood who I was, they wouldn't be doing this. That's why He could say something like that, looking at people that were yelling at Him, cursing at Him, had spit at Him, because He saw in this the larger picture and realized that forgiveness is the very essence of what it means to walk in Christ's shoes. So, this is why we forgive. Because God has given us His nature in the person of the Holy Spirit, and we desire Him. Now, that's the theological, that's the biblical basis for why we as Christians should always be forgiving. It's because who God is, and we want to emulate God. So now we want to talk about who should we forgive? Well, the obvious initial answer is everyone, of course. But I'm going to boil it down to four categories of people or situations here that you might want to ponder and think about this morning. The first group is people who have done something to us that affect our lives forever and to a great degree are still in our life. We're not talking about some minor irritation. What we're talking about is a woman who's assaulted and becomes pregnant. We're talking about a child who is physically abused and as a result has a permanent disability. Or we're talking about an individual who lies and might cause us to lose a job that we hold dear and that we love. These are life-altering situations. And these incidents, because of that, will change everything we do from that point on. So how can we ultimately forgive someone who does something so horrible to us? Well, we ultimately can do it through Christ's strength, because His Word clearly teaches. And I want you to listen very carefully, because if you don't grasp what I'm about to say, you could either be confused or even offended. When people do something so horrible to us, Christ's strength can help us because His Word clearly teaches that no matter what has happened to us, that it's small compared to what our sins have done that sent Jesus to the cross. Now, I'm going to illustrate this a bit. I'm going to paraphrase Matthew 18, 21, 35. We're not going to read it. I'm going to paraphrase it a minute, but let me make sure you understand this. If we had a scale of 1 to 10 of horrible things somebody could do to us, and 10 being the worst, and you said this particular incident you described is a 10, you can't get any worse than that. But when you add the equation in of Jesus' death on the cross, now we make the scale 1 to 100. And it's still a 10, what people have done to us, but comparatively speaking, what we've done to Jesus by sending Him to the cross, it's 100. Do not hear in this, it's trivial, it's unimportant, it's a comparison statement. So let me share with you this this parable, Matthew 18, 21 to 35. By the way, if I could get a glass of water, I would be grateful. Okay, I'd be grateful. Look at that. Thank you, Brandon. If I could get $100, I'd be even... No. Just seeing if you're all awake. All right. Here's the story in Matthew 18. Peter and Jesus are having a conversation, and Peter says, "Hey, Jesus, how often should I forgive my brother? Up to 7 times? Like, aren't you impressed with that?" And Jesus says, "No, Peter, not up to 7 times, but up to 70 times 7. Now, if you're real literal, he's not saying 490 times and then you don't have to forgive anymore. He's making a statement saying, if you think it's only 7 times, it's really unlimited, Peter. You never, ever, ever stop forgiving. So Jesus says, let me tell you a story. The Bible, we call those parables. He said there was a king, and one day he wanted to call account everybody that owed him money. So one of the servants that came in owed him, and we're going to put it in the modern vernacular, owed him thousands of dollars. And the king said to him, "Pay up, or I'm going to sell you, your wife, your children, and take all your possessions until the debt's fully paid." And the guy says, "I can't do it." So he falls down before the king. He begs him. He says, "Please forgive me. Please forgive me. Have mercy on me, and I will pay the debt." And the story Jesus tells says that the king was so moved by this man that he forgives his entire debt. The guy goes immediately out and finds a fellow servant who owes him a few $100s. And he says, "Pay up." And the guy falls down and says, "Please have mercy on me and I'll do it." And the guy says, "No." And so he has him thrown into prison until he could pay up all of his money. Well, other servants in the realm hear about this. They go back to the king and they say, "Hey, king, we understand you forgave this guy thousands of dollars, and somebody owes him a few $100s, and he won't forgive him, and he had him thrown in prison." So the king brings him back in, and he says, "What's this all about? I forgave you this huge debt, and you can't forgive a smaller debt?" He says, "You wicked, evil servant, how could you do this?" And so he says, "Throw this man in jail until he could pay his full debt." And then he adds this kind of cryptic comment. He said, "So will my heavenly Father do to you if you don't forgive others from your heart." Now, I don't fully understand that last statement completely. What I believe is not happening, Jesus isn't saying, "Well, you're going to lose your salvation and go to hell." He's just saying that the essence of the way the kingdom is worked out is you're supposed to forgive all the time, and if you don't do it, you're not acting like one of my servants. In the story, if you could say that what the second servant did to the first servant in terms of owing him $100 would again, in the analogy, be a 10 on a scale of 1 to 10. But in terms of what we've done to the king, i.e. Jesus, it pales by comparison because that's 100. That's why when we say to ourselves, "I can't forgive so-and-so, I can't forgive this person because how horrible it is," all you have to do is look at Jesus and he says, "No, you can, because look what I did." I want to read you a powerful story. I've kept this story for years. And it's a true story because it happened here in the valley. And I remember this story when it occurred. Some of you longtime Valleyites might remember this story. Of all places where it's written, the story I'm going to tell you about the power of the outer limits of forgiveness is written by E.J. Montini. Now, Mr. Montini is a columnist, still is, for the Arizona Republic. I would say he's not real crazy about us evangelical Christians, to say the least. He's never usually too happy with us. But wait till you read what he writes in this true story, and I'm going to have to edit it a little bit as we go along. Trudy Calabrese is the woman's name. Her murderer stood in open court last week and told a judge, "Regardless of what my family thinks, I deserve the death penalty." Trudy's husband, this is the murdered woman's husband, Rosario, widowed father of two children, sat quietly nearby and disagreed. "Oh, I don't think he should die," Calabrese told me. "Why not?" he was asked. "Because," he said, "the Bible tells me so." Then he paused and added, "Also, this is the thing Trudy would not want. I'm sure about it. She was not such a person." One day last February, the Living Springs Assembly of God Church got a call from a man by the name of John Sansing. He told them he and his wife, Kara, and their three children were going through hard times and needed food. He heard that the church had a program that might help. Later that night, Trudy Calabrese arrived at the Sansing's home carrying a box of groceries. As she walked through the front door, and I'll edit it here, Sansing and his wife attacked her, murdered her, and threw her body outside. Besides the food, Trudy had $1.25 in her pocket, and they took that too. All of these events are known to Rosario Calabrese. The suspects were quickly arrested, the knife found under a sofa cushion, but it doesn't change his mind. "When you marry," he said, the sharp edges of his English smoothed over by a Sicilian accent, "you make a commitment. I do the same thing with the Lord. He tells me you need to forgive, and I do. If I don't, I would be so angry inside, and it's no way to go through the day with all the anger. So I tell the Lord, I'm giving it to you, and I try to go on best as I can." Within days of Trudy's murder, the congregation at her church had gathered clothes and toys for the suspect's four children. Even now, they pray for Sansing and his wife, who's expected to strike a deal soon with prosecutors. In court last week, Sansing said, "To you, Mr. Calabrese, and your kids, I'm very sorry. I wish I could change it, but I can't." By the way, I didn't mention that he was high in crack cocaine at the time. Rosario met his wife Trudy in Germany. He moved there from Sicily to work. She was in the Air Force, and they came to the Phoenix area in 1996, settling on the western edge of the city in Avondale, where Rosario plans to stay. "Our life is here," he said. "We must go on. When I see this man Sansing in court, I'm glad about what he said. He knows what he did. His family is broken like my family. It's not easy for him to go through life with this." And then Montini writes, "As if it should be easy for him. There are times when this business you can't help but put yourself in the place of the person you're writing about. I think of Rosario, a man with kids, and myself, a man with two kids. And I know if I was in a situation, I'd spend every moment plotting to kill the person who did this in a way more gruesome than even imagined. But if you don't forgive, the Lord may not forgive you," says Sansing. So what, he has asked. "And if you never forget," he said, "you may never find any joy in your kids. Maybe they will have no joy also." Rosario and Trudy have a daughter and a son. The girl was 10 when her mom died, the boy only 6. Rosario said he hasn't spoken to his daughter about Sansing or his punishment. He learned recently, though, that she had written a letter to the sentencing judge asking that Sansing's life be spared. "Her mother would be so proud," he told me, his voice rising with an unexpected but easily identified emotion. Joy. Joy. The murderer wants to die, and the family is pleading that he wouldn't die. You say today, "Things happened so horrible to me, I can't forgive." You want to top this? If he could forgive, you can forgive. What's the second group of people? The second group of people are people that have done things to us, maybe similar like in the first group, but they're people that can't respond to us. Maybe they're out of your life forever, they've moved away, or possibly even have died. And of course, the last part of this makes it so hard because you really can't hear anyone say to you ever, I'm sorry for what I did or please forgive me. But forgiveness is still possible because of the choices that you and I can make. Even though the person's not right before us, we could still say the words to the Lord, I forgive you, and have God change our hearts. Now the story I'm about to tell you is a story I have shared with you to some degree before, so this won't be a new story, but I'm going to tell you a little more about it. When I was a Christian of maybe 20 plus years, a pastor at a church, teaching people about the things of the Lord, many of you were at Word of Grace Church at the time I was doing this, my mother was still alive. Now, my mother and I had a very, very difficult relationship. She never abused me in the classic sense, but her critiquing, her constant berating, the only kind of visual I could give you all is if you could think of the character Marie from the TV show Everybody Loves Raymond, Raymond's mother, her times 10. Lest you think I exaggerate. When she was living at the assisted living place that she was at the end of her life, and there were over 300 people there, I was talking one day to the assistant manager who happened to be a Christian, and we're talking about my mother, and she said, I hate to tell you this, but your mother is the second worst person here we have to deal with. And my first thought was, who could beat her? So it wasn't just me. She was a very difficult woman to deal with all the time. And so as the years wore on, as I got older, my feelings of anger and frustration and at times bitterness kept growing to the point that I even thought one day, I thought, you know, Lord, I'm a Christian, obviously, you know that. And I don't want to see anything really, really bad happen to her. But if there was a way she could just kind of slip into eternity peacefully, and if you could do that as soon as you can, I would be real grateful. Now you say, that's terrible. Yes, it is terrible. But that's how I felt. Your pastor, if you were there, Word of Grace, 20 years ago, was thinking thoughts like this. And it kept growing every day till one day I started to get a little smarter and I thought, I can't go on like this. So here's what I started doing. I thought, somehow my heart's got to change because every time I see her... Oh, to add kind of insult to injury to this, when my mom and dad were both alive, I said to the Lord, look, I don't ask you for much. And I'm pretty good. I don't ask the Lord for a lot. Okay? So I said to him, please do not let my dad predecease my mother. And my dad died before my mother. And I literally said this to God. I looked up at him and I said, you've just sent me to hell. I said, how could you do this to me? Okay? I'm telling you all these wonderful godly thoughts that are going on in my mind. Okay? But this is really how I felt, and it was frustrating, and I thought, and I have one sibling, an older brother at the time, and he's living in Houston, and my mom's here and I'm here, and she's kind of a frail older person. So guess who gets the joy of having to help somewhat take care of her, even though she's at an assisted living place on the opposite end of town? And I said, God, how could you do this to me? I thought you loved me. Okay? So, we fast forward the years, and one day I get a call from the assisted living place, and my mom has fallen, and she has, like, bruised her ribs or broken her ribs, and they sent her to the hospital, which is directly across the street. So Maria and I show up there, it's on a weekend, and they're telling me they're going to release her back to the assisted living. Now, I'm looking at my mother, and I've already figured this out. There is no way in God's green earth that this woman's going to be able to go back and take care of herself. And I'm thinking, what does that mean? And I say, I don't even want to go there to what that means. Okay? Like that. And even Maria said, you know, maybe this is to me. She says, maybe this is a good time to have your mom really pray to give her heart to the Lord. Because I really questioned whether my mom knew the Lord. And she said, why don't you pray with your mother? I couldn't even do it. That's how bound up I was in my bitterness and frustration. So Maria prayed with her, really neat how she prayed with her to kind of give her heart to the Lord. And it's beautiful that I thought, but how's this still going to work? And this is where the grace of God did come in, because a hospital worker, social worker came in and said, look, since your mom is not really ready to go back, and we have insurance, a provision to go to rehab hospital, would you like us to have her go there? Yes, I said, yes, yes, yes. That. So she goes from a hospital at Glendale to West Phoenix. This was on a Sunday night. On Wednesday, I go to visit her, okay? And as I go in her room, the nurse that's feeding her, we're talking for a moment, and right in front of me, my mom's head goes back, and she's passed out, or as I'm finding out, it's time that she's dying. She died. The nurse drops the food, runs out, about a dozen hospital personnel come in, throw me out of the room, and despite what I was feeling about my mom, I was like shaking, and I'm all by myself, standing out at a nurse's station, and a doctor walks out and says, "What would you like me to do?" Now, this happens in about 15 seconds, and my first thought is, why are you asking me? You're the doctor. And then it hits you, but this, we're in a brave new world today. Doctors don't make decisions unless you want. Now, this whole conversation I'm going to tell you doesn't happen in this time. It's just so quick. But I'm thinking to myself, my mom's peacefully passed away. Maria prayed with her to receive the Lord. Just let her go. I'm thinking, this is a gift. And I open my mouth and I look at the doctor and I say, "Doctor, do whatever it takes to save her life." He walks back in there and I lose it and I'm sobbing and I'm thinking, what in the world just happened? And as I'm trying to process in the emotion of my shaking, I started to realize something. 2 years earlier when I was praying every day, "Father, help me to forgive my mother. Father, help me to forgive my mother." At that moment, came true. And I had a feeling for her that I hadn't felt in a long time. Was it pity? It was love. It was love. She survived. We brought her to another hospital because they had to put her on a trach, a breathing apparatus, to get off that. She went from there to a place 3 miles from where we lived in Chandler, a nursing home. And Marie and I by then were talking and saying, if we have to, my mom will come live with us. That's how much my heart changed. Now, within a few weeks, she one day peacefully did go home to be with the Lord. But I was at such peace and realizing God had healed me so much. That truly was the gift from God. The third type of person we need to forgive is ourself. Is ourself. Many times people say, "Well, I know God's forgiven," that they know God has forgiven them, but they say, "Well, I really can't forgive myself. I've just done too many bad things." You know, at first this sounds really noble. Look at me, I'm not trying to be prideful, I'm trying to realize that I've been this terrible Christian witness and I really can't forgive myself. But you know in reality what the real truth of it is, and this might come as a shock to some of you, that if God forgives our sins and remember them no more, and we can't forgive ourselves, you know what we're saying? We're saying we're better than God. That's true. That's exactly what we're saying. Psalm 103 verse 12 says, "As far as the east is from the west, so far has he removed our transgressions from us." You say, "Well, that's because he's God." I get that. But understand this. If God's saying it's a done deal, it's forgiven, you've asked me to forgive you and I've forgiven you, and you say, "Great, but I won't forgive me." You're saying I'm greater than God. Some of you today really, really need to forgive yourself. Now, if you've dealt with whatever the issue is, if you've done something wrong and you've really asked for forgiveness and done it, if you haven't done that, you need to do that first. But if you've done it and you're still going around weeks, months, years later, still feeling horrible about you, get over it. Forgive yourself. Number four, fourth type of person we need to forgive is God Himself. God Himself. This, for some of you, might even seem unthinkable. What do you mean I need to forgive God? But we're all smart enough to figure this out. I've talked to enough people in my Bible classes. You know that God is sovereign, which means He can do anything He wants, right? And if you're asking Him to do something and it doesn't happen and something, in your opinion, bad happens because He didn't answer your prayers, you can add that up and say, I think God, it's your fault. I think it's really because you did this or you allowed this to happen that's causing this to happen, and I'm not so happy with you right now. Well, I can tell you this from another personal story, okay? Back many, many years ago, I was all set for our family to go live here in the valley under Prescott and help start a church under the auspices of what was then Gospel Echoes, which was the forerunner to Word of Grace Church. Okay? So we planned painstakingly for 6 months to go live in Prescott. Okay? And just as we're ready to make the move, I get a call from the man up there that's going to help us. And he says, oh, I want to let you know I've changed my mind. I'm not going to help you. I'm going to help another church, but you're still welcome to come up here. Simultaneously, when this is happening, I'm with a group of people from the church, and we're praying fervently for, I don't know what, a staff position on the church. And we all, 10 of us, unanimously thought of the same person. Slam dunk, right? We approached the person. They said, we're not interested. This all happens within the same day or two. So this is what Bob concludes. Okay, God, if you didn't really want me to go to Prescott, you could have done this way earlier. He says, I get it if you don't want me to go, but we've made all these plans around the way to go, and now you pull the rug out from under us, and now 10 of us are praying about this issue, and we all hear the same thing from you, and the person says, not me, not hearing you. I said, what's going on here? So I said, well, I don't think I like this. So I decided I'm not going to talk to you, God. And I didn't for 6 weeks. Now after 6 weeks, I said, this is dumb. I heard the angels start to applaud in heaven, you know. So I said to the Lord, I said, look, I realize you're not the issue. I'm just mad, and I was, you know, I'm bitter at you, so I release you. I forgive you. I know it's not your fault, but I'm sorry. So we got our relationship back again. But I didn't talk to him for 6 weeks. I was that mad and frustrated. One of the most amazing situations I've ever come across as a pastor that I'm about to tell you in relation to this point is this. I was on staff at Word of Grace about 6 months at the time. So I was in maybe my mid to late 30s. And a woman came to see me in my office. Now, she and her husband had just recently come back from South America where they were missionaries. And she came to my office, and you could tell she was an emotional wreck. She had a piece of tissue in her hand, and she was doing this the whole time she's talking to me. Like that. You could just feel like on the verge of a nervous breakdown. And they just randomly got me as one of the pastors of the church to talk to. And I said, so what are you here for? And she said, well, we had to leave the work that we were doing down in South America because I can't take it anymore. And I said, what do you mean? So I said, well, give me your story. Christian parents, by all account from her wonderful parents, went to Christian schools her whole life, married this man she'd been married to now for like 30 years, and from all accounts, he was a wonderful man. By the way, I spent some time with him, and I thought he is a wonderful guy. He had this calling to go do orphanages down in South America, and so I'm thinking, well, what's the issue? What's the problem? And she says, I just can't take it anymore because I feel like if I fail even one time, God is going to destroy me. I said, one time? Explain this to me. So, long story short, this was her theology. This is what she believed. And the whole time I'm listening to this woman, I'm thinking, Christian parents, you've gone to Christian schools, you've been in church all your life, and you see God like this? I thought, where did this go wrong? Now, I'm not going to do this just to be funny. There was a funny moment, but it was also a sad, serious moment. I said to her, well, then tell me as best as you can, what do you really think God is like? Now, you have to understand, I'm looking at a woman that I would characterize as one of the most proper women I've ever seen. And if you could picture the Queen of England sitting there, very proper woman. So I said, what do you think God's really like? She bends over, and I bend over, and she says in a whisper, I think he's a blank blank. And I'm thinking to myself, they never taught me in seminary how to handle this. She says two profane words. And I mean, I would, if you gave me 1,000 possibilities, I'd have never guessed this. So then I said to her, why are we whispering? And she says, I kid you not, otherwise he'll hear me. So I did something that was a little bit unorthodox, but I wanted to prove to this woman that the God she served was not the God that she believed. So I sat back up and I said, you know what I think we ought to do right now? I think you ought to tell God exactly what you told me, that you think he's a, and I repeated the two words. Of course, she went like this, and I said, why did I do it? Because I said, there's no lightning bolts. I said, no, we don't want to talk like that. But I said, but God's not going to destroy you. He loves you. He's crazy about you. But the whole time she's with that tissue like that. And I thought, well, I can't push this any farther. And we never got resolution. But I never forgot her because I thought, how sad. But over the years, I have met Christians that have what I would call very strange views about God. All the time. Every so often I have a strange view about God, okay? But the point of it is, that's why we need each other. And so today, you may be in one of these four groups. You may be a person that you have not been able to forgive somebody else. You may be a person that has not been able to forgive yourself. You may be a person deep down inside that you still hold God responsible for something that you're not really dealing with, okay? So here's how we're going to end today, because I would like this to be a response. You say, well, that's all well and good, Pastor Bob. Thank you for telling me all about this, but I'm a person that needs to know, how do you deal with it? So I'm going to tell you how you're going to deal with it. Number one, you must be willing to forgive any and all people. No qualifiers, no holds barred. And this is how you're going to do it. Number two, by saying every day, I forgive, fill in the blank. I forgive this person. I forgive that person. Lord, help me to forgive myself. Lord, I forgive you. You just say it. Many, many years ago, I met a woman and we were talking about this subject of forgiveness. And she said, well, this works. She says, let me tell you my story. She goes, I was married and my what was then her ex-husband left her for another woman. And she said, I was very bitter, and I went to my pastor, and he said, pray a prayer like this every day. She says, well, I really don't want to. And she said, that's the only way to freedom and to get real health. So she said, okay. So her initial prayer was this: Lord, I forgive the no good, fill in the next word, and the adulterous woman he's living with. That was her prayer. Is that a legitimate prayer? Yes, if it's a choice of that and no prayer, you bet it is. Now, it's not a good prayer if you're waiting 5 years down the line and do it. So every day, for a few days to weeks, she's praying, Lord, forgive the no good, this, that, and the adulterous woman. And finally, after a few weeks, this was her prayer. Lord, forgive. She inserts the first name of the ex-husband and the adulterous woman. And after a few more weeks, Lord, forgive. Insert first name of ex-husband, first name of the woman. Every day for 6 months. And not long after that, she had a situation where she had relationship with him because of the children in their lives, and she saw them both, and when she saw them and talked to him and they left, she said, oh my gosh, I have no negative feelings toward them. It works. I don't know if you know this. Yeah, you can plug. Most of you do not know this. But prior to being married to my perfect wife, Yes, she is. I'll leave it right there. Prior to being married to my wife, I was married before to a Christian woman. Actually, she was a gospel singer, and we had a tumultuous relationship, and she left me for somebody else. Okay? So, God bless you, sister. But anyway, but here's the deal. I'm sharing you this morning as honestly as I can. Issues with my mother, ex-wife, even with God. Okay? I'm telling you that the way to freedom is to pray with conviction every day of your life and to say just simply, I forgive, fill in the blank. What's at stake if you do this? Let me read something to you. I just read this 2 weeks ago, a new survey. Studies have now found a striking array of benefits around forgiveness. Listen to this list. Compared to less forgiving peers, forgiving people have lower blood pressure, lower bad cholesterol and resting heart rates, improved sleep and immune systems, less depression, less anxiety, less anger, enhanced relationships, more optimism, and a greater sense of overall well-being. One recent study shows that people can even jump a little higher after forgiving another person. Yeah. Woo! So here's how we're going to end today. I'm going to call up Velvet, who's going to, in a moment, be singing a real, real special song. And this is what I'm going to do. And trust me, you will not be alone. You will not be alone. If you're here today and said, this speaks to me, I have suppressed things in my life, I have suppressed issues. Listen, some of you today are angry that go all the way back to your childhood because you had parents that you felt did things to you and you've just ignored it, you've gone on with life. But as I'm talking right now, the Spirit of God is bringing that up to the surface. You're saying, I don't want it to be brought up to the surface. Yes, you do, because you want to deal with it. Some of you need to forgive your parents. Some of you need to forgive past relationships, ex-spouses or whatever. You know, you cannot effectively be in a good relationship today unless you have really forgiven people in the past like I had to do. Okay? You can't move on with life. Maybe there's people in your lives today that have done horrible, unfair things to you. Welcome to the human race. Welcome to the human race, folks. I can't guarantee it'll never happen again. You could be the most nicest, wonderful person in the world like Eric. Okay? But I'm here to tell you that it's going to happen. Okay? You have to do this. Now, I'm going to ask you during the time that Velvet sings to come forward and to kneel, to sit. If you have to cry, if you have to feel the anger and just kind of get it out, get it out. You're in a safe place here. But I'm here to tell you today, you say, well, I don't feel like to do this. I hear the formula. I'll just go home and start doing it. Great, you're going to need to keep doing it until you feel the forgiveness. But first, you're going to make a decision with your will to forgive. You decide first with your will, then your feelings catch up. But if you're in this moment and God's speaking to you, I don't want you to lose the opportunity to make a statement to yourself and to God that I mean business today. You might say, well, all right, I'd like to forgive, but I don't know if I really can. Then pray this prayer. Lord, I'm willing to be willing. That's a legitimate prayer. I'm not willing to forgive so-and-so today, but I'm willing to be willing. I want you to change my heart. I do believe, Lord. Help me in my unbelief. There's something powerful about making a statement when God's speaking to you to come. If you're physically able to kneel, if you want to come and sit in the front row, if you even want to stand, if you need to cry, if you need to do whatever, get it out. If you need to start whispering the name of the person or persons or yourself, maybe you're saying, I'm in all of those categories, then start today. What's at stake? Your freedom. If you don't do it, it's your bondage. You come as Velvet sings.
I see shattered, you see whole. I see broken, and you see beautiful. And you're helping me to believe, 'cause you're restoring me piece by piece. There's nothing too dirty that you can't make worthy. You wash me in mercy. I am clean. There's nothing too dirty that you can't make worthy. You wash me in mercy. I am. Dead now lives again. My heart's beating inside my chest. Now I'm coming alive with joy and destiny. Nothing too dirty can't make worthy. You wash me in mercy. I am clean. There's nothing too dirty that you can't make worthy. You wash me in mercy. I am clean. Your blood flowed red and it made me white. Our dirty rags are purified.